Hockey O'Clock.
Achtung! Was für ein Move! Nächste Chance! Was für ein Pass zur Mitte! 1-0! Und der nächste Fight am Eis entbrennt! Hier entladen sich die Emotionen! Da haben wir doch noch was, um mit der Zunge zu schnalzen!
It's Hockey O'Clock and it's time to talk about the NHL again. It's with none other than Hockey O'Clock's favorite NHL pundit. It's none other than former Florida Panthers head coach and general manager Tom Rowe. And coach, I have to say, no one or hardly anyone else that I like to talk hockey as much as I do with you. So great to have you on the podcast.
As usual, I enjoy it as much as you do.
Coach, it's been basically a month that we had the honor of talking to each other. What have you been up to ever since? I know that you're looking to get back into coaching. What's been up these past few weeks?
Yeah, I mean it hasn't been easy, Martin. It's, you know, I've talked with a few teams, and I think I told you earlier I was most definitely going to be going to a team in the NLB, Chatham. But their head coach was being sought after to be an assistant coach in the NLA. So Lloyd Burkhalter and I have got to know each other pretty well over the last year or so. And he called me and he says, if my head coach does accept the position and move up to the NLA, would you come here and be our coach? And I said, absolutely. I really like Lloyd. He's a classy guy, young general manager, real up and coming guy. And I think the two of us in the year that we've known each other have really grown to build a lot of trust within each other, which is what I'm always looking for. So that was an opportunity. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. Their head coach decided to stay in Chatham because he wanted to remain as a head coach and not be an assistant, which was a smart move on his part because he is a very good young coach. And then I talked with Izzalone. Izzalone had called and we had a pretty good discussion there. They said that, you know, you're being seriously considered here, but we want to first see how Brad Tapper does as the interim. If he does well, we may just end up staying with him. So that ended up working out for Brad. And those were two jobs that I was really keeping an eye on. And, you know, I had some other things going on, a couple of other offers, but not situations I thought were good for me. And I didn't think it was a good overall situation, so I passed on those. So I've decided to sit back and wait. And because any of the jobs I was looking at were taken. So we'll just see what happens once the season starts. And if there's any movement, then I think my agents, Martin and Chichka, he's been talking to a lot of teams. And I think a lot of teams know that I'm available. I want it to be in the right situation before I leave here and head back over to Europe. But I definitely want to come back. Love it. Love the coaching the players. Love the fans. I mean, it's just quality of life is amazing, and I love the passionate players that I've coached in Linz last year and a half when I was there. So that's what I'm looking forward to and trying to find something like that.
Obviously, if some Central European or in general European club is looking for great coaching, you might be one of the first calls that they're trying to get. But I know it's a delicate issue, but I mean, how frustrating is it at times if you're just happen to stare at the phone and waiting for it to go off for or to have another or get another shot at coaching?
Yeah, I mean, it is frustrating. What's more frustrating is when the teams just tell your agent we're not interested because we hear Tom's, you know, really hard on players, or we think he's getting up there in age a little bit. So that kind of makes me laugh a little bit when I hear that, because I got a ton of energy, and I think any of the guys that I coached in Linz, they know how I am, and I certainly don't act like a 65-year-old guy, that's for sure. And I'm not going to BS you. It's, you know, there are some management teams that think I can be too hard, and I definitely can, but I push guys. But I think at the same time, I create an atmosphere where the guys enjoy coming to the rink and they definitely get better. And you know, I think my last year in Linz is pretty good proof that we had things going really good there. We had Klangerford down 3-0 in the first round of the playoffs. Then everything blew up because of COVID. But the time off has been good, because if people still think I'm tough, too tough, then yeah, I probably have to adjust a little bit. But I know Dave Cameron's no pushover, and he has unbelievable results every year. And Petrie and Klangerford, he's not a soft coach, and he's won two out of the last three championships. So players want to be held accountable. Players want discipline, and they want to be pushed. So if there's a team that's willing to sit down and talk, then I would love to talk to anybody.
And just to show how much of a pro you are, we're recording this conversation on Friday, May 21st, where you're still 64 years old. When this podcast sees the day of light, you're going to be 65 years old. So in advance, and I know you normally don't do that, happy 65th birthday, which is going to happen on May the 23rd. But as you were talking about the current situation and that you might be too tough, where did you get that reputation?
I got it, yeah, in North America when I first started coaching. I definitely was intense. And matter of fact, I met with a very young coach the other day who coaches the East Coast Hockey League team here in my hometown. And I said, once you get a reputation, it's hard to shake it. And that's, I mean, and I was intense. I mean, I push guys, and, you know, I would get in their face pretty good when I was younger. And because that's how I was always coached. But I always never took anything personal. I never held any grudge. If I benched a guy or scratched a guy, you know, he would get back in the lineup either the next game or, you know, usually no more than two games would he sit out. So that's what happens. You get tagged being too tough, and, you know, people get a little afraid of that, especially with today's players. That being said, I have talked an awful lot. Larry Mitchell and I are very good friends, the GM in Ingolstadt, and him and I have had lots of discussions. And he even said that, and he was pretty well known as a hard guy too, but he said he had even adjusted his way of doing things when he coached. And I have adjusted, for sure I've adjusted. Was I too tough before? Probably. But I don't think I am anymore. But once you get that reputation, it's hard to shake. But I just encourage anybody, when I was interviewing this summer and talking to some teams, I strongly, strongly encourage them to call my players that we had in Linz. And I gave them a list of all the phone numbers. I said, I won't even call any of them. You know, I might give a couple of heads up that they may get a phone call, which I did. I said, but call anybody on that roster. And if you don't like what you hear, then fine. You know, let's end the discussions. But I think the guys who could give the most honest opinion of a coach are the players you're with every single day. You know, how does he treat you? Does he respect players? How are his practices? How's his preparation? The players are very educated today, very smart. And they're the best judges of a coach, I think. And, you know, I know when I was a general manager over here, I called players. I'd say, hey, what do you think of your coach that you had? We're thinking of hiring them here in Florida. So always got good opinions. Players are educated today a lot more than they used to be when I was playing. So something will happen. And once the right opportunity comes along, I'll be very excited about it.
Pulling my thumbs for it. What I can vouch for is basically that you're one of the nicest guys off the ice. I don't know about the on the ice part, but yeah, that that's up for others. What I and we brought you on this podcast is obviously to talk about the National Hockey League. We're in full swing as regards the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's unfortunately, because the podcast season is going to end the last time that we're going to bring you on. We're trying to look ahead a little bit as regards to Stanley Cup playoffs. Look ahead for some clubs that are already have headed into their off seasons. But just from a pure entertainment standpoint, how entertaining have these first few games of the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs been?
It's been unbelievable, and the intensity, the speed, the physical play. The plays that guys are making in full flight are just unreal. And I'll be honest with you, I had a conversation with a guy the other day, guy I golf with quite a bit over here, and he said, how much better is the league now than when I played? And I said, oh, my God, you can't even compare it. It's, you know, dark ages that I played in compared to today. These guys, you know, even 5 years ago, the game's so much better today than it was then. So it's amazing. It really does amaze me what these guys can do on skates and how well they move for the size that they are. Like Victor Hedman, we'll probably talk about later on in the podcast here as a candidate for the Norris Trophy. He's 6'6", 240 pounds, and he moves around like he's 5'6", 180 pounds. And that's what's pretty amazing about it. But from a pure entertainment standpoint, even if you're not a hockey fan and you tune in to watch, you're going to love what you see. And I think hockey, especially the National Hockey League, is in such a great spot, and it's only going to get better. So, yeah, entertaining-wise, I mean, I don't miss a game. I just sat up last night for about, 1:30 watching all the games. It was so much fun.
We've had the Boston and Washington series go to 3 overtimes in the first 3 games. We had incredible entertaining affairs in the South Florida showdown, as it's been labeled. We had Minnesota steal one of the best 0-0 affairs that in my mind has ever headed to overtime in game one against Las Vegas. What's been standing, or what stood out for you so far? What's the one series, what's the one game that you marvel at right now?
Well, and I'm not saying it because I used to work for the Florida Panthers, but that series, even the coaches, if you heard the post-game press conference of John Cooper and Joel Quenneville, John Cooper he said, that's why our sport's the greatest sport in the world, because you just witnessed one of the best games, if not the best game, in the last 15 to 20 years. That series, to me, because you have to give Tampa Bay the edge with the talent, and definitely the edge in goal. But what Florida is just so starving to have a winning team there, and the fans are starving to be able to watch a real good team. The players in Florida just aren't going to be denied. So Florida has talent. They've got Barkov, they got Huberto, they got Verhaeghe. I mean, they've got some good players. But outside of Barkov, you know, they can't match up talent to talent against Kucherov or Stamkos or Point. You know, Barkov and Point, you know, kind of neutralize each other a little bit. But what's impressed the heck out of me is Florida is just being just relentless. And Joel Quenneville, as the head coach, has done a phenomenal job believing, getting those guys to believe that they can win, and they can win the Stanley Cup this year. So just watching, obviously I'll speak to Florida a little more, but it is my favorite series so far that I've watched, because I know especially what's gone on behind the scenes there. And now where they're at, they gutted the roster, brought in a lot of high-end character guys, a lot of skill, which is what I think we talked about early in the podcast, going back a few months ago. But that series to me has been unreal. Last night, 6-5 overtime by Florida. Florida goes up 2-0, then they're losing 5-3, then they tie it up 5-5, and then they run a face-off play to score the winning goal. They have their fourth liner on the ice, Lomberg. And you could see him talk about the faceoff if they won it. And as soon as they won it, both wingers took off, got in behind Hedman, and Lomborg, who hasn't scored a goal all year, scored a goal as if he was Kucherov. It was unbelievable. So that's what I love about playoff hockey. Even if you're not a fan, you're going to love watching these games. But for me, that Tampa Bay-Florida series is something, and everybody over here is talking about it. Everybody, all the media, everyone. And all the other series have been fabulous. But the one being talked about in every circle is the Florida-Tampa Bay series.
I have to say, we're a day away from covering the series, finally on Pulse 24, although this will have already happened when the podcast airs. But how does a normal game day, a normal Stanley Cup playoff day look like in the Rowe household? Is it 7 p.m. sharp and you're telling your wife, okay, please don't disturb me for the next 6.5 hours.
Yeah. Bernice knows, you know, we always sit there and she'll glance up at it once in a while when she hears the people screaming when they score a goal. But yeah, she knows around 7 or 7:30 that we're going to be tuning the TV to hockey, and she sits there and reads her book. So Bernice and I couldn't be two opposites further away from. She's real artsy, really into the arts and theater, and I'm obviously a sports guy. but she knows I love it, and she makes sure that the TV's free on that particular moment.
Great stuff. Great to know that you're getting along after all those years.
With 42 years, so it's still going strong.
There you go. But as much as we enjoy the playoffs, we have to talk about one of the nastier things that might happen in this bang-bang sport. Was this the playoff start from hell for the Maple Leafs yesterday? Obviously, they lost their home ice advantage against their rival, the Canadiens, and they lost John Tavares for the foreseeable future with one of the nastiest collisions I've seen in a very long time.
Yeah, no, that was... I couldn't believe how hard he was hit, and to see somebody go off on a stretcher is always pretty sickening, you know, and for the players, coaches, everybody on the ice when you just see something like that happen. But will it hurt Toronto, you know, in the series? I don't believe so. I think kind of why Kyle Dubas went out and got the depth that he got was in case they did hit an injury that was a major injury, which now they certainly have. But yeah, it's terrible when you see something like that happen. Not surprising, because these guys are going so fast. And when they do collide, you know, every once in a while, you're going to have a nasty injury like that, unfortunately.
Now, there's only a couple of series that could end by the date this podcast appears on people's podcast feeds. There still might be a lot of round one hockey to be played. Give me, with all the things that we've seen so far, with all the things that we know, your series with the biggest upset potential for round one.
Well, I think the biggest upset potential for round one would be Minnesota over Vegas. I think that would be a real big upset. Minnesota's had a great season, but I know everybody going in has Vegas picked probably in five games, no more than six. So that would definitely be an upset. And then, you know, Toronto, Montreal series, maybe, but I wouldn't classify it as a major one. I do think if Florida gets by Tampa Bay, then yeah, that's a major upset, because as good a season as Florida's had, and they've been unreal, I would have to think most people have got Tampa Bay, especially the way Tampa Bay's playing now. I mean, they've got everybody back. They're on all cylinders. So I would have to pick those two series. And if I had to go with just one, then I would probably say Minnesota beating Vegas would be the biggest surprise in the first round.
If the other upset was to happen, that would mean that, again, we don't get back-to-back champions. In the salary cap era, there's just been one repeat champion with the Pittsburgh Penguins. What does it say about the state of the league and the state of pro hockey in the National Hockey League that there's only been one back-to-back champion in the salary cap era?
It's what Gary Bettman wanted to do when he first became commissioner of the league, God knows how many years ago at this point, but one of his main points was to make sure there was parity in the National Hockey League. And he's done an incredible job building that. You know, he got the salary cap in, which was the only way teams were going to be able to survive long-term. Player development has been such an onus put on player development over the last 20 years. And now you're starting to really see all the fruits of all the teams' labor, not just, you know, some of them, most of them. But the parity is incredible. I mean, there's just so many good players out there. There aren't any secrets when it comes to scouting. You have analytics now. You've got staffs that, you know, put just together a video department. So there's just so much information. And if you're doing the right information and you're training your players and developing your players correctly, then you are going to start turning out a lot of players. And I think you're starting to see that now. And it's gotten younger. The league has gotten younger. And a lot faster and a lot more skilled. And with that come mistakes, right? So I think the game is real entertaining to watch now, more so than it even was, you know, 10 years ago. But no, the parity, and that was a plan that Gary Bettman had when he first took over as the commissioner, is to make sure we didn't have any more Edmonton Oilers, Montreal Canadiens, New York Islander dynasties, because he just felt that wasn't good for the long-term health of the league, and he's done a great job.
Now, you're an England guy, so you're North American as well, or US American. So yeah, I'm sure you might have heard about the New England Patriots dynasty in American football, where there is a salary cap as well, where you do have double the amount of players on your team per football squad. Now, the Patriots have won 6 championships within 18 years. Mm-hmm. Do you think something similar might ever happen in hockey, or is it just too unrealistic?
I think it's too unrealistic. I don't see it. I really don't. Just because of the way the salary cap is balanced. NFL, I mean, the football and hockey are different. In hockey, you've got 4 grueling physical series that you have to get through. Football, American football, obviously, is a violent
4 games.
Sport. Yeah, exactly. But all you got to do is play 4 games, and you're playing 17 games a year. So there's a huge difference, and you definitely have some time to rest and recover. Where hockey, you might have, you know, back-to-back games during the regular season. You're going to run into a ton of injuries. Guys who win the Stanley Cup, they're going to go all the way to June. This year it'll be July. And then you're starting training camp up in September. So the guys who in a normal year, you know, without COVID, you know, the guys are finishing up in June. There's no way they're going to go work out after winning the Stanley Cup for at least another month. Maybe, you know, some guys would, but I'm sure there's more guys that would take almost a month off to let their bodies recover. And then, man, mentally, you're right back in the grind again. You're going to training camp. And then 3 days after camp starts, you have exhibition scheduled. So a lot of that, I think, holds back a team to have back-to-back championship seasons. Pittsburgh did it. They had Malkin, they had Crosby, they had an incredible team. But I don't think that'll be the norm.
Now, as 16 teams are still battling for the Stanley Cup, there are 15 teams that have already been headed to the off season. How does this work? Once your season is over and you've been a GM, you've been a head coach in the National Hockey League, what are the first next steps that you're going to take as soon as your season has ended?
Yeah, typically what happens is, and I did it, I didn't necessarily do, well, we did do it in Florida after my first year. I was the associate GM. So I sat in on those meetings. After my first full year as GM, I got fired fairly quickly after the season. So I didn't sit in those meetings, but typically what will happen, and I always did it at the minor league level, is exit interviews with the players. So it's an opportunity to hear what the player has to say, have a good two-way conversation. There'll be a meeting with the head coach, and then there'll be another separate meeting with the general manager. And that's where the general manager will find out if there are any issues in the locker room between players and coaches, and then he'll gather that information, sit down with the coach, and just say, listen, here's some good stuff, here's some bad stuff that you might want to think about going into next season. So the big thing is the player exit interviews, and those are really important. After that, everybody takes a deep breath because you don't want to make too many harsh decisions while your emotions are still high over the season you had. And if you're not in the playoffs, it wasn't a good season. So everybody's pretty upset and not happy and in a bad spot. So that's all the talk about firing coaches and trading players, or depending on GMs, maybe firing the GM. So you gotta let all that kind of stuff calm down. And then the GM and the head coach will usually get together and kind of evaluate the season, talk about it. The GM will give his feedback to the head coach will give his feedback to the GM, and it all depends what kind of relationship goes on there too. Some GM and coach have a great relationship, some relationships are strained, and you may not get as much information flowing back and forth. But the real good organizations, and I would have to think most of the teams today, there's a good give and take. But it's critical to have those exit interviews and everybody be as honest as they can with each other. So if you're not in the playoffs, we got to figure out why and fix it. And then even before those meetings, ownership might be having somebody evaluate the entire hockey operations without the GM even really knowing. So, but that happens if a team has had a disastrous season. So there's all sorts of things going on behind the scenes, especially for the teams who don't make the playoffs. And then after that's over, you know, then they're, you know, the amateur scout meetings have been going on pretty much starting seriously in January. But now the amateur scouts are getting ready for the draft. The assistant GM, director, player, personnel, they're having their conference calls and in-person meetings as well. So that's going on. And then you have your pro scouts. They're evaluating free agents. You know, who do they want to move off the current roster and who are the players they want to target during free agency to bring in for the following year. So the amateur and pro scouting evaluations are going on simultaneously. And that would be the lion's share of what goes on. But, you know, the draft, free agents, and now with COVID, I can't imagine conversations what are going on there with budgets, because still the salary cap is not as going to be as high because the revenue streams have been way down. So they're just going to keep it as is. And so there's a lot of stuff going on. It's a 12-month a year job. Not like it used to be back in the 60s and 70s and even part of the 80s where it was 6 months. You know, they're going 7 days a week almost.
Got a ton of follow-up questions to everything that you just said. But if you might want to take some listeners into the room of an exit interview, you got player XYZ sitting in front of you. Is there a structure to, or maybe with just the Florida organization, because it's so hard to tell if other organizations do it the same way, but is there a structure to the interview, or are you just shooting straight from the hip and trying to pick a player's brain?
Yeah, there are some GMs that are definitely structured and have pointed questions and have a game plan that they want to go in with. Like Lou Lamoriello, I would assume, I've never been in one of his meetings, but everything I hear, it would be extremely structured, and he would have a game plan on what he wants to talk about. And then there'd be other GMs who would just be a sit-down discussion. How you feeling? You know, how do you think your season went? And that's how a lot of these will start. The GM will say, well, you know, how do you think things went for you this year? And kind of let the player talk first. And then from that, depending on what the player says, a lot of other questions will evolve from the GM to the player. So it's really a lot of time just sit down, have a one-on-one conversation, and it could be a half an hour, it could be 10 minutes, it could be 5 minutes. It all depends on that player's situation. But I think the organizations who are going to advance, they probably want to get information from the player that they can use to improve their hockey operations going forward. I don't think they're going to use it to deep six anybody. Unfortunately, sometimes a lot of information comes out of those player meetings with the GM about the coach. And sometimes that's where decisions are made. Do we keep the coach or do we move on and find somebody different that is a better fit for this team? So, but it's you can only imagine if you're sitting down having an exit interview with your boss, and some players know they don't want to come back and they're going to test free agency, they're going to be brutally honest, most of them. But a player who, like Barkov's not going to be a guy that deep sixes anybody, but he would be very professional. And for instance, you know what? Bill Zito's a GM in Florida. Typical comment might be, you know what, Bill, we had an unbelievable year. You established incredible culture. You know, we do believe we can win, but maybe we need a little more depth for a third or fourth line. You know, just, and he would give some instances of something like that. So it's all over the map. And a lot of times it depends on the player. Some players don't like to say anything. They just sit there, they listen, okay, thank you, and they want to get out of that office so fast, it's not even funny.
But as all the exit interviews have been conducted, obviously a lot of teams' attention moves towards the draft. How unusual with all the junior leagues not even having a season or a shortened season with everything that the pandemic wrecked, how unusual is this draft going to be?
Oh yeah, it's going to be unusual for sure, because I'm sure teams are going to be going off of past seasons on guys that are draft eligible, and you know, the guys who have got the blue chip prospect tag are going to be fine. But I feel bad for the guys from the third round to the seventh round. You know, some of those guys may not even get drafted because there's just too many questions because you didn't get to see him play at all. Like the Ontario Hockey League never even played. So that is an animal in itself. I don't know how they're dealing with it. I think a lot of video, and they're going off of previous seasons, and they're going off of analytics. That's where analytics would come into play in a big way. But I would have to think there's going to be some kids that don't get drafted just because of what's gone on with COVID, especially the guys you don't know about, you know, you're up in the air about. But the first two round guys who are ranked in the first two rounds, you know, they're going to, you know, they're still going to get drafted. They're still going to move on and do fine. But they'll be, I think you'll see more of a free agent coming out of junior getting invited to come to NHL camps first before they do any type of draft pick or use a draft pick on a player. And I think you may see a lot of trading going on as far as draft pick goes from some teams, not all teams, but maybe some teams. But it's, I don't know. I haven't really talked to many people how they're dealing with it, but it can't be easy.
Now, this next question could obviously go a lot of ways. We were talking that 15 teams are now officially in their off season. What teams off season will you follow maybe a little closer than others? What teams off season are you most curious about?
Well, the one I've been following it already to see what they're doing on a daily basis is the New York Rangers. That was over here. That was a firing that caught everybody by surprise in a big way, because I thought they were doing a really nice job and going in the right direction. So I just want to see what, and probably because of my own situation in Florida, I went in there not as an experienced general manager. I just want to see how he handles situations, how he handles who he's going to hire as a coach, how long it takes him to hire the coach, and then what kind of coach he brings in. Is that coach totally different from David Quinn that when David was there? Is it a total different personality? What kind of free agents are they going to go after? Or, you know, are they done with the rebuild? You know, because when Jeff Gorton and John Davidson were there, it was all about the rebuild, and they weren't totally finished with it yet. And they drafted a lot of good players. They had a lot of good young players on the roster. So it'll be very interesting to see what Chris Drury does. Is he going to stay on that track? And if he does, is he going to go after a couple of free agents that might expedite the building program? So that's who I'm following real close.
Was it a gimme for you when Chris Drury was appointed general manager that he might want to bring in his quote-unquote head coach or a new head coach?
Yeah, you know, because I know there was a lot of talk here. One, was I surprised that he got named president of hockey ops and GM? Not really, because he had been there grooming. They were grooming him for, I think, 4 years now. And he's won Stanley Cups. He's won everywhere he's gone, everywhere. And no matter what's where he got, he won a Little League World Series when he was 12 years old over here, which is, in the States, is huge, right? So he's had this pedigree of winning everywhere. So I can see why management in New York wanted him, because it's an easy sell to the fans. And he's a smart guy. He's got Glenn Sather sitting there helping him along the way. So he'll have good guidance there. But when he fired David Quinn, a couple of guys said, man, I can't believe he did that, because they knew each other so well. Came out of Boston University. But yeah, that didn't surprise me one iota, because at the end of the day, it wasn't his guy. You know, he didn't hire him as the head coach. And he may want to have somebody different that might get them quicker to the playoffs, because don't kid yourself, they are going to be expected to make the playoffs next year by their fans, and well, more by the management, because the fans were on board with the rebuild. But now that's kind of been put into flux a little bit. So, but I know for sure the ownership there, they want to be in the playoffs again. So it's going to be interesting to see who he hires. That I'll pay real attention, close attention to, and again, a name that's being brought up again, and I think he's an unbelievable coach, is Bob Hartley. Now, a lot of people think he's way too hard on players, and he is extremely hard, but he's got a He's got a championship in the American Hockey League. He won a Stanley Cup in the National Hockey League. He won a championship in the Swiss NLA. And he just won a Gagarin Cup in the Continental Hockey League with Omsk.
Omsk, so yeah, right.
He's got four major championships on his belt. Now, over time, I think everybody calms down a little bit. And I think if they say, hey, Bob, we want to hire you the coach, but, you know, we don't want you being as intense as you have been in the past, because that's what I think is keeping him from getting another NHL head job. But I know Bob really well, and I think he's a great coach, and Drury won a Stanley Cup with him in Colorado. So I would not be a bit surprised if Bob Hartley is one of the finalists going forward.
We're talking about a 60-year-old head coach, and as you've mentioned, he's been one of the tougher guys on the job. How hard is it to teach an old dog new tricks?
Oh, you can. For sure you can. Especially if you want to be back coaching the NHL. And I do think, and Bob's a smart guy. Hey, John Tortorella, there's nobody tougher in hockey than John Tortorella. Nobody, okay? But he's a great coach and he gets results. So it all depends on what your ownership and management team want. And, you know, as hard as John is, all his players speak very highly of him. Okay. So I think that's an awfully good thing to hear, you know, from your players. Like I said earlier, players are the best, I think, the best judges for a coach. But yeah, he's 60 years old. Joe Quenneville's 63 years old. So, and they've got experience. They've been through the war. They're not a young, inexperienced guy. They're not going to be phased one iota about a game seven in the playoffs. Not one, not even a little bit. They know how to go after it, and they know how to get their teams prepared. So I do think there's an awful lot to be said for experience. And I think there are too many young coaches being, you know, and I'm not saying it because I'm a coach. There are too many young coaches just being handed coaching jobs when they're not ready for it. And it ruins coaches. And yeah, I mean, if somebody's going to hand you or hire you as an NHL head coach, you're certainly not going to say no. But I just think there needs to be a little more of a progression for these coaches instead of coming. There's so many players that are literally just hung up the skates and they're being put on an NHL bench as an assistant coach. I don't care how smart you are. There aren't too many players that can step right into a coaching role and be comfortable doing it, number one, stand in front of the room and give some kind of a video presentation if they're given that opportunity. They may not be given that opportunity. So it's just, there's a lot of teaching that needs to be done. The hours, players aren't used to going to the rink at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning and stay until 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock at night. And that's what some coaches in the NHL do. So it'll be interesting to see what Chris does in New York, but that's going to be a team that I get up every day and I read about what they're doing and just seeing how they're doing it, just because I want to learn from it and I want to see what their mindset is.
As you were mentioning, their offseason has been one of the most interesting ones to date. At what stage do you think the rebuild is from a scale from 1 to 10? 1, incomplete. 10 complete. Where is the Rangers rebuild right now?
I would say about 5. Like I said, they got some good young kids there and they've got more in the pipeline. I don't know all their prospects that are in juniors and college, but from everything you read, they're stacked pretty good. But I say 5 because I personally, I think ownership says, okay, enough of this. We're far enough along with the rebuild. Let's go out and get some free agents to get us back to the playoffs and win another Stanley Cup. Because at the end of the day, there's only one thing that the New York Rangers owner wants, and he wants to win another Stanley Cup. So, you know, good or bad, that's what they want there, especially in a huge market like that. And, hey, when you have the LA Kings, the New York Rangers, Montreal Canadiens at the top and really making a lot of noise, it's good for everybody because you get a ton of media out of it.
And a good thing about the Rangers, and maybe especially Chris Drury, he will be able to work because the Knicks are competitive again, and Dolan might put his attention towards the Knicks, whereas the Rangers just might be able to enjoy a quiet offseason, if there's ever a quiet offseason in New York.
Yeah, I don't think there's any quiet offseason anywhere.
Right. Coach, Some other news that we need to dissect. And one of your former disciples has now joined your former National Hockey League organization.
Yeah.
Jürgen Penker is going to be a scout in Europe for Florida's new goaltending excellence department that was put into existence by no other than Roberto Luongo. When you heard the news that Jürgen Penker ascended towards the NHL ranks, what was your first reaction?
What a great hire. Really good hire. I mean, and him and I had discussions because I knew he wanted to get to the NHL in some capacity. And I do think he can be a goalie coach at that level someday. But I thought, what a smart move by him. Nobody called me. I think the relationship he had there, matter of fact, I know it's with Francois Allaire, was the contact he had, and Allaire brought his name up to Luongo. And I'm assuming that's how that got started. Because Jürgen, and I've been around, I've been in hockey for 40 years. Jürgen's work ethic and attention to detail is as good as anybody I've ever been with. And I told him that in a couple of meetings him and I had. So that is going to really do well for him, because he doesn't leave any stone unturned. He is a tireless worker. He's very efficient. He doesn't waste time. He knows what he wants. He knows what he's looking at. And I always felt very confident in him when he was talking about goaltenders. You know, all the other stuff when we were teaching him on the penalty killing as an assistant coach, he was picking that up quickly. He was learning fast, and he did it with a lot of energy. So I just think they could not have made a better hire in Europe to find goaltenders for that organization. And that department, that's a new department. And I don't know if it's a fad or if we're going to see it get caught on with every team in the National Hockey League. But I'll tell you what, they hired an unbelievable guy there to head up their European piece of it, to go out and find some real good goaltenders.
I mean, as you were talking about the recent fad of, or basically it's the first ever goaltending excellence department that's put into place, do you think that will catch on as the National Hockey League is a copycat league? Or is this one gonna be the one goaltending excellence department for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, no, it'll catch on if it does real well. And there'll be some teams in the National Hockey League, they'll just never do that. But they have it already with whoever they've got working, looking for goaltenders. They just haven't tagged it a name. They haven't given it a name. You know, the big name right now is just goaltending development. And you have that area that's obviously run by a goalie, and he works with all the goalie coaches. I hated scouting goalies because I didn't know anything about them, just that they're supposed to stop the puck. But when I was a pro scout, okay, and they got to the point where they would just have a former goaltender scout goalies, and that's it. So, you know, it's easy to pick up on a true blue prospect, but that position is just so technical. You better have somebody like Jürgen going after your amateur after your areas of the amateur goalies to find the good ones out there, because man, oh man, it's a tough, tough position to analyze. Now, anybody who says he knows a lot about goaltending who's never played the position is full of crap, because it's hard.
Hey, I was stuck in a goaltender uniform once, and I couldn't move one bit. So not that I don't know anything about goaltending, but it gives you some kind of appreciation what they're doing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just think Florida made a great hire with Jürgen, and I'm excited for him. He's pretty pumped.
We'll leave it at that, Coach. We're going to take a quick break, and then it's going to be award season. And for the last time this podcast season, we're going to break down one team. Back in a bit. Hockey O'Clock mit Martin Fahner wird unterstützt von Kazumo.com. Kazumo, das ist Wetten leicht gemacht. Kazumo ist der einfache und faire Sportwettenanbieter in Österreich. Nationale oder internationale Fußballspiele oder viele
andere Sportarten. Mit Casumo.com liegst du in jedem Fall richtig. Mit dem Link in den Shownotes dieses Podcasts holst du dir eine 10 Euro Freiwette. Einfach Link klicken und gleich loslegen. Casumo.com, das ist Casumo.com. Casumo, Wetten leicht gemacht.
Back on Hockey O'Clock, back with none other than former Florida Panthers head coach and general manager and of course former Linz head coach Tom Rowe. Coach, first part, we tackle most of the important topics, but as the regular season has finished and as the National Hockey League heads towards their award season as well, we thought we'd hand out some of the awards as well. And I obviously asked you to prepare the most important ones on an individual basis and on a team basis. We're going to start with the individual awards first. We're going to take it from the net to the forwards, and obviously I'm first of all most interested in your Vezina Trophy recipient for the highly unusual 2020-2021 season.
Yeah, and it's been an unusual season for sure. And I think I may have talked about Price early when we first started doing all this, but watching Vasilevskiy and Fleury this year, and then I paid close attention to both guys, especially Fleury. He's been unbelievable in Vegas, absolutely amazing. And Vasilevskiy it's Vasilevskiy. The guy's going to be a Hall of Famer probably someday. But he's just so big, so agile, and just can win the big games all the time. Those are my two finalists. And then the guy that I'm going to go with is Fleury, based on what he's done in Vegas. I think a lot of people thought it was done for him. He wasn't going to be able to perform at the level that he is right now. But that's the guy I'm going with, because he's back where he was when he was winning the Stanley Cups in Pittsburgh.
I mean, from everything that he's done on the ice, he deserves it. But do you think with voters, there is some kind of sentiment where one of them might go, he's never won the Vezina, although he should have, so I'm giving him the vote?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, there might be some voting like that going on, for sure. Everybody's human, right? And they got personal feelings. And he's a very likable guy. Like, everybody loves him. I know the owner, there was some discussion about possibly trading him in the offseason, and the owner stepped right in and he said, absolutely not. He said, we will not be trading him. So that tells you the importance he brings to that locker room every day. And, and Kelly McCrim was just doing his job as a great GM that he is. You know, you got to look at your options, but he'll get some sentimental votes for sure. But I think he deserves it. He's done a lot. He's rebounded, and they brought in, you know, some depth to push him, and he's won the position back.
He's got an Olympic gold medal. He's been a first overall draft pick, the last one on the goalie position. He's won cups. He might be a Vezina Trophy recipient, and he might be a cup winner for two different teams. What would that cup, if it were to happen with Vegas this year, mean for his legacy?
Well, I think it gets him into the Hall of Fame for sure.
And he's not there already?
You don't know how they're going to vote.
Line?
I mean, I would think he's there, but if you're saying if he wins another Stanley Cup in Vegas, then he's definitely there. But yeah, if he can go, it's just because he's so positive. He's full of energy. He's a funny guy. I know Jimmy Rutherford, when Jimmy had him in Pittsburgh, absolutely loved him. You know, he's just a consummate team guy that you ever could want in a goaltender. Goaltending, I mean, that's a fickle position. Personalities are a little sensitive. They can turn teams off. They can hurt teams if, you know, they get into a mood. He's not like that. He's just a good guy, positive. He's always helping other people out, and very supportive teammates. So I think if he wins the Vegas Stanley Cup, man, oh, man, he'll go down, I think, as probably one of the better ones in a long time.
Now, as we've tackled the position in the net right in front of the netminder, there is the defenseman, and usually the best defenseman is awarded with the Norris Trophy. There could be so many options, maybe more than in recent years. But who would be your Norris Trophy recipient for this past regular season?
Yeah, for me, it's an easy one. It would definitely be Victor Hedman.
You know, again.
I think. I mean, you've got Adam Fox in New York. You got Roman Josi in Nashville. You got Cal Makar out in Colorado. All fabulous. And Cal Makar could end up getting it because they are talking about him as a serious winner. But when you look at Hedman, he averages 25 minutes a night, probably going to be closer to 30 minutes a night now in the playoffs. He's tough physically. He's a shutdown D-man. He's always up against the best D, the best line every single night. Defensively, he's going to be in the last minute of every game protecting the lead. He does everything. I think he does it better than all the other guys that I just brought up. And I love I love Adam Fox, Roman Josi, all great players. Cal Makar, unbelievable. And Makar is going to be a Norris Trophy winner someday. But I just don't think any of those other guys bring the whole package from physical to, you know, being able to have the stamina that Hedman has. You know, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if some of these games, when they go into double and triple overtime, which easily could happen, that he could be pushing 35 minutes. And he's got the body and the frame to handle that. Plus, do it at an extremely high level. I mean, it's phenomenal what he can do. Now, he got blown by last night in the overtime winner by Florida, but that was just wouldn't call it a fluke. It just happened, but that doesn't happen to him too much. But no, Hedman's my guy for sure.
Now, as we've handed out two of the four individual awards that we're going to award on this podcast, it's now time for my favorite award, the Selke Trophy, which annually goes to the best defensive forward. This has been Patrice Bergeron's award most of the times, basically. Yeah. four times in his career. Is he a shoo-in for another one, or has someone else caught your attention?
Well, obviously, being home here last year, I've read an awful lot and followed every team, not just a certain few. And I love Patrice Bergeron. And when we were in Florida working together with the scouts, we just said, you know, we got Barkov. He's our franchise guy. And he is the Patrice Bergeron of Florida. He can score. He can shut teams down. But he hasn't had as great a year. Barkov hasn't had as great a year analytics-wise, defensively, as he has had in the past, but he's still phenomenal. And then, obviously, everybody would build a team around Patrice Bergeron. You want those types of players. But for this podcast, I wanted to just talk about a few other guys because there are other names, and two are on Minnesota. One is Foligno, who's a big guy. He's a bottom six offensive-type guy, but he's putting up defensive numbers this year that are the best in the league, and he's only giving up 1.5 chances against per game in high danger areas. So that's usually in the house, which is right in the front of the net in the prime scoring area. He's only given up 1.5 a game on average, which is phenomenal. And then the other guy that's being talked about is Eriksson Ek, who's a real pain in the neck to play against, another Minnesota guy. And score goals, agitates like crazy. And then obviously Pavelski. Pavelski is similar to Bergeron. Those are kind of the three guys that I ended up settling on, and Bergeron and Pavelski would be right in the same conversation. But I think if we're picking just this year, Foligno is at the best year of anybody that is going to be a candidate to win the Selke trophy. So I went with Foligno. Because the other thing that he does is he's basically their enforcer. So when things get a little too rough out there, he sticks his nose in there and settles it down. So he's fighting for the better of the team. He's supporting his teammates. But defensively, man, oh, man, when you're going up against him, you're not getting anything offensively. So that's going to be my pick, whether I'm right or not, who knows.
Now, as you mentioned, one of the guys that's already watching the playoffs from his couch with Joe Pavelski, how important do you think for voters it is that a recipient of an award made the playoffs with his team?
I would think they put some stock into it, but if we're just taking the regular season, I think you just got to base it on that only. And look at them. There's so much information now, stats wise, analytics. You've got everything that can tell you how good the guy was in that particular role. And if the numbers prove it out, then why shouldn't he be given the award, whether he's in the playoffs or not?
Absolutely right. As we are closing in on the end of our individual awards, of course, there is the big one, the Hart Memorial Trophy that goes to the most valuable player in the National Hockey League. Who is that going to be in your mind if you had a vote?
Well, if I had a vote, it's going to come down to Barkov and McDavid. You know, if Florida doesn't have Barkov, they don't do what they did this year. If Edmonton loses McDavid, there's not a chance that they do what they're doing this year, getting into the playoffs. Plus, McDavid put up over 100 points in 56 games. So for me, it would go to McDavid. And you know how much I like Barkov. You know, Alexander Barkov is as important to Florida as McDavid is to Edmonton. But the fact that McDavid put up 100 points is pretty darn impressive. So that's who I would give it to. And Barkov's had an unbelievable year, his best goal scoring year. So he'll definitely get some votes, but I think it's a foregone conclusion already that McDavid will be the winner.
I know one of the first conversations that we had a couple of years ago, I asked you who the best player you ever coached was, and you immediately, like within a split second, said Alexander Barkov. As he is a Finnish guy, we're gonna turn our attentions a little later to the conversation who the best Finnish guy in the league is, okay. And if it is Alexander Barkov or indeed Sebastian Aho, whom we're gonna talk a little bit about later. But as we've handed out all the individual awards, I just want to quickly talk about two team awards, one that you want to have, one that you don't want to have. The biggest disappointment and the biggest surprise of the season. I'm going to start with the latter one, the biggest surprise. Who has impressed you? Who has surprised you in a positive way this past regular season?
Yeah, and again, everybody is going to think that I'm pumping Florida's tires all the time because I am going to pick Florida. Now, the people are saying, oh, come on, just because you work there. Remember, Florida fired me, so I don't have any soft spot there.
And in all honesty, they're a very likable team, incredibly skilled, yeah. Young, and they're overdue to have success again after a quarter century of playoff failures.
Exactly. But what they've done is they gutted that roster. They brought in like 10 new guys this year. I have not missed one game. I've watched every single one of their. Matter of fact, I was talking to their CEO the other day, Matty Caldwell, and he called me and, you know, just checking in, getting caught up. And I told him that. He said, you got to be kidding me. He says, you watched every one of our games. I said, yeah. And the reason I watch them is you guys are so much fun to watch. And they are. They work. If they have to fight, they fight. They play physical. But not in a million years did I think that they would do what they did this year. I did not think that they would be challenging for the President's Trophy like they were there for a little while. I knew there would be a playoff team. I knew they'd be in the mix of it, no problem. Even felt they'd be able to maybe win a round in the playoffs. But the fact that they were at the very top of the league all year long, that did surprise me, especially when they got some injuries. I think at one point they had Hornquist out, they had Barkov out. Those two guys right there, when you're missing them in your lineup, that's a huge hole. And they brought in kids from the taxi squad that Jordy Kinnear had developed down in Springfield in the American Hockey League, and they just kept winning. So that was impressive to watch. It really was. And good for the organization because they've been through an awful lot of pain. And now they're having a blast watching that team. So for me, that is definitely the surprise of the year.
Now, as I was asking you about who's going to have the most interesting offseason, I would have taken a wild guess and said you're going to pick the New York Rangers. Now, as I'm asking you about the biggest disappointment, my wild guess would be the Philadelphia Flyers. But who is your biggest disappointment? Yes? Did I hit on that?
Yeah, you did. That's who I wrote down, actually. When I was going through my notes last night after you had sent that text, because Philadelphia, they had such a good year last year. The expectations going into the season were very, very high. And they were doing okay there for a little while, but then they just kind of flamed out. And then they never even made the playoffs. So that, for me, what the reasons were, don't know totally. Some guys obviously maybe underperformed, but that was a shock. I just thought that they were going to be – I didn't think they would be winning the Stanley Cup or getting to the conference finals, but I certainly didn't see them being knocked out of the playoffs and not even being there.
Glad I hit on that one. And this finally leads us to your revered and well-known team breakdowns. We broke down teams or two teams in each podcast the past couple of episodes you were on. This time around, I thought we're just doing one. Obviously, one team very near and dear to your heart that I, for instance, choose and not the users. Because it's a team I'm highly interested in. It's a team that could be going on a long Stanley Cup run. And when I filled in the NHL playoff bracket challenge, I ended up with them being a Stanley Cup champion. So it remains to be seen if that's going to happen, as I'm really, really bad at picking stuff. But we're talking about the Carolina Hurricanes. Obviously, you're from the Carolinas. You know them pretty well. You've been in that organization. You worked for them. Just as we're talking about this squad of the 2020-2021 season, how did Carolina get to where they are right now?
Well, they did a great job drafting over the years. Like when Ronnie Francis and Jimmy Rutherford were working together there, they had some really good drafts. Aho being one, Pesci on defense. Their whole back end, the young kids, the draft picks, have really stepped up and done a great job. So they've done some phenomenal drafting. I know when Ronnie Francis, when he was there and before he got fired by the owner, you know, he was real happy in the direction they were going in, but he knew they had to get some grit and they had to toughen up a little bit. And the new regime coming in did that. And that was kind of what got them to the next level. But it was a combination of drafting really good trades and real good free agents. I thought they did a real good job in all three of those areas. And then they went out and, brought in some goaltenders with Reimer and Mrazek and, got them going, and they had some the young kid that's playing there now, his last name slips me right now. But between the three of the goaltenders that they have on their roster, it's a lot of depth. And anybody that goes in net, that team in front of them is very comfortable with whoever's in there. So I think they've done a great job with the goaltender. The biggest reason, and don't kid yourselves, you know, the head coach, and I hear some people saying, oh, how important is the head coach? But the head coach sets the tone, and the leadership that Roddy Brind'Amour brought to that organization day one when he was named the head coach is by far, I think, the biggest reason that team has taken off the way it has, because the talent's always been there. But they just – nobody was pushing the right buttons who was running the bench. And Roddy has come in there and demanded accountability, discipline. And Roddy is – he's probably in better shape than any of his players as we speak. He's in a phenomenal condition. So that's where it started with him. He said, everybody's going to be in shape. We're all going to compete as hard as we possibly can. And if you don't do those two things, you're not going to get the ice time. And that was the biggest thing. He held every single player accountable, not just the fourth line guys and the extra guys and the fifth and sixth, seventh and eighth defensemen. Those are the easy guys to hold accountable. But the stars of the team, Aho, Staal, all those guys, if they weren't pulling their weight, they'd get their ice time reduced too. For me, that was the missing piece that they didn't have there. And he's gone in there and demanded and created standards that are so high that everybody everybody had to meet them, and they've done it. Now, that team now, if they end up in the conference finals, I won't be one bit surprised. But for me, that was the missing piece, was the accountability, the consistent message. And Roddy is not a screamer and a yeller. He'll just matter-of-factly pull you into his office if you're a player and just say, hey, you're not getting it done. We've gone over a couple of things here. It's still not changing. You're out of the lineup tonight. And that's probably about the emotion he'll use, but he never loses the trust of that player. The players trust him. They'll run through a wall for him. And I think that is why they're going to be so dangerous in the playoffs.
Now, as we're talking about best Finnish player in the league, who's currently wearing the championship belt as regards that title? Is it Aho? Is it Barkov? Or is it a tie?
Boy, oh boy. I'm going to be a chicken on this one, Martin. I want to tell you it's probably a tie because Barkov, Aho is probably a little more dynamic than Barkov, okay? But Barkov, for me, is more consistent. You know, and you don't intimidate him. Not that Aho is going to get intimidated, because I don't think he does. He competes so hard for a small guy. But Barkov is in every situation, can get every situation done from a physical standpoint, defensive standpoint, offensive, everything. Aho is probably a little more creative, a little more dynamic, but they're both great players. So, you know, I would say it's a tie, but if you say no, Tom, you got to pick one over the other. And given what Carolina's done over the last couple of years, then yeah, okay, I'll go with Aho. But Barkov, man, is right there. And I hate doing that, but I would give him a slight, and it's only a very slight edge to Aho.
See, we're really asking the tough questions here on the podcast. So the next one's probably a little easier to answer. Now, the addition of Vincent Trocheck, it's been one of the much more scrutinized ones. Is that addition potentially one that could put Carolina over the top, or was it a quote-unquote missing link on that team?
I think so. For me, remember Butch Goring? This is going back a long time. When the New York Islanders won their first Stanley Cup, Al Arbor wanted a player like Butch Goring. And Bill Torrey, the GM at the time, went out and made a trade with the LA Kings for Butch Goring. Butch Goring was the missing piece for the Islander team, and they went on to win four Stanley Cups in a row. I'm not saying Carolina's going to win the Stanley Cup, but they're going to certainly be right there. And Trocheck, for me, is that missing piece, because they add Aho, they have Staal, and they just needed another center iceman that they could count on to create some offense, but not only create offense, be a real good player in the playoffs. And Vincent is that. He's tough. I don't care. Because I coached him. I coached him in the minors. I coached him in Florida. I've seen him literally have teeth hanging out of his head and would not miss a shift and refuse to miss a shift. And this would be a regular season game. We'd kick him off the bench. He'd go in, get repaired, and boom, before you know it, he's right back out there. That's the competitive spirit that kid has, and he just wants to win real bad. Now, him and I got into it quite a bit in the minors because I was pushing him to be better defensively, and he was a typical young kid, thought he was great and, you know, had everything figured out. And him and Joel Quenneville, there's a reason they traded him. Maybe him and Joel didn't exactly see eye to eye. I don't know any of the stories. I'm just kind of assuming that. But Vinny Trocheck, man, oh, man. When I saw that trade made, I said, whew, I said, Carolina just got better in a hurry. Now, he didn't go in there and set the house on fire right out of the gate. But I knew over time, once he got used to Rod's system and the demands Rod was going to put on him, he'd be a real good player for them. So, yeah, I got all the time in the world. And Vinny Trocheck can play on my team any day of the week. A kid is awesome.
Now, if we're turning our attention to Carolina's goaltending depth, you already mentioned Razik and Reimer, but it was Alex Nedeljkovic, yeah. and that name would have slipped myself as well, as it's a fairly complicated one to remember. No offense here to Nedeljkovic, but he kind of surprisingly got to start the Stanley Cup playoffs in the net for the Hurricanes. Yeah. On one hand, did it surprise you as well? And on the other hand, is that the best goaltending depth in the entire National Hockey League that we're talking about?
Yeah, I do think it's the best for sure, because I don't think there's another team that have three goaltenders like that on their roster right now. Now, obviously, with COVID, you have the taxi squad, so you have that at your disposal, which is great. Was I surprised that he started game one? Absolutely not. And that goes back to what we were just saying about Rod Brind'Amour holding everybody accountable and not being afraid to make tough decisions. I would think most coaches, myself included, probably would have taken the easy way out and gotten with one of the experienced guys. But Roddy obviously saw something in the kid. The kid came in and played great. Had a real good record. The goals against average, save percentage was phenomenal. So Roddy, that's Roddy. He rewards the people who are performing at their best at that particular time. So no, I wasn't surprised at all. And now you see what they're doing against a good team. Even though Nashville, you know, they scratched and clawed to get into the playoffs, is still a really good team. In the last 20 games of the year, they were one of the best teams in the league. But it does surprise me at all that they're up 2-0 in the series.
And the track record for teams that have gone up 2-0 in the Stanley Cup playoffs is a really, really good one. I stored the number here on my computer, and it says that 86.6% of the 2-0 leaders in a series have gone on to win a series. So obviously recent history, or in general, Stanley Cup playoff history is against the Nashville Predators. Now, as the Carolina Hurricanes have got to the playoffs and won their division, a lot of people have been talking about their championship window. And I know that's a dicey issue, and fortunes could change fast in the National Hockey League, as with all other pro leagues in North American sports. But if we're talking championship window, how long do you think this one that the Hurricanes have at their disposal right now might remain open?
When I saw your question there, I'd say 2 to 3 years. You know, I think,
is that just a normal cycle?
Yeah, oh, it is for sure, because then you start running into free agents and you start losing players to free agency. But no, I think they can win it this year, and then I would give them another 3 years after that. Real for sure, the next two, but I want to add on one more year because I do think they got enough depth in the organization. Here's what the big thing, the big telltale will be this. They lost Rick Dudley, who was director of player personnel, to Florida. That's a huge loss because he's a really, really good evaluator of talent. And he oversaw the pro scouting and the amateur scouting in Carolina. So it all depends. I'm not sure who they have doing it now, but it all depends who's doing it, how they're doing it, what they're looking at. Did they take Dudley's model and just continue with it? But at the end of the day, you're going to have scouts are out there identifying that talent. And that's where Dudley came in and got that team. He got the missing pieces on that roster that weren't there and pushed them over the edge. So losing him, you know, would be probably one of the biggest free agents they lost when he walked out the door to go to Florida. So that's why I say, I think the players that are there now, depending on term with their contracts, legitimately, they got two this year, plus two more years to potentially win the cup.
Now, the interesting thing about the Carolina Hurricanes is that they're based in Raleigh, North Carolina. You yourself are based in South Carolina, but they're called the Carolina Hurricanes, which kind of should make them a team for all the Carolinas. How much of South Carolina does indeed root for the North Carolina-based Carolina Hurricanes?
Not very much, if at all. I mean, they're not even, you know, I'm sure there's a spattering of fans down here that pay attention, but it's a North Carolina team. I know they base themselves, they call themselves Carolina Hurricanes, but it's North Carolina. In South Carolina, where I am, Martin, it's Clemson football every day, all day. That's all you hear about. Clemson football morning, noon, and night. So that's who everybody cheers for. It's either University of South Carolina or Clemson, but it's predominantly South Carolina's Clemson football.
And you've had quite a lot to cheer about. Two national championships that Dabo Swinney brought to South Carolina past couple of years. How's hockey doing in South Carolina?
Really good. Actually, the Washington Capitals farm team in the East Coast Hockey League is based here in South Carolina. Every year they got a real good team. And the youth hockey. I live in a town called Mount Pleasant. And between Mount Pleasant and Charleston, there's a lot of kids playing hockey. So in the South, it's not a real popular sport, though. When the Hurricanes won the Stanley Cup back in 05-06, hockey in the South went through the roof, and then Tampa Bay. So Southern hockey has definitely become a more popular, but in the specific area I am, it's more baseball and football. But the youth hockey programs are starting to crank up too, which is good.
Now, this year, we're going to celebrate the 15th anniversary of the Carolina Hurricanes Stanley Cup winning squad. You experienced that yourself, not from a front row seat, but you were part of the organization at that time as well. How did you experience that Stanley Cup winning campaign?
Yeah, no, it was, my God, it was a blast. Because the year before they won the Stanley Cup was a lockout year. So I had eight, nine guys on my roster in the American Hockey League the year before they won the Stanley Cup. So Eric Staal, Cam Ward was with us. Mike Commodore was with us. A guy by the name of Craig Adams played for us, Chad LaRose. Those are all guys who made the big club the following year, and then they went on to win the Stanley Cup. So it was probably the proudest moment I've had in hockey as a coach when I saw nine of those guys go on to win the Stanley Cup. And I was there for the final series. Game 7 was amazing. The players came out. You had 19,000 people in the building. And I'm not kidding you, not one person sat down the entire game. They stood up the entire game. It was an unbelievable game. And to watch, you know, the guys you had carry the Stanley Cup around the rink, you know, Eric Staal, never forget, was carrying the cup around the rink, put it down and came over and gave me a great big hug. What else can you ask for? You know, so that was my proudest moment that I've ever had as a coach. And to watch those kids win the Stanley Cup was pretty amazing. You see them today and you'll bump into each other once in a while. They come right over, you know, shake hands, and we have a good conversation, and then you move on. But no, it was, you know, Eric Staal was awesome. And Mike Commodore to this day, you know, we have a good relationship. So yeah, it was fun. It was really good. But to have nine guys off your roster the year before go up and actually be important players on that Stanley Cup team was unbelievable to watch.
I can only imagine. As we're talking about hoisting the Stanley Cup, I know you're going to hate me for this question. I'm always kind of putting you at gunpoint. But who do you think, and I know it's going to be, it has to be a wild guess because it's so wide open, and you could basically award the cup to 10 or 12 teams right now. But who do you think eventually is going to hoist the trophy this year?
I think it'll be Colorado. I think they have so much speed. They had a good goaltender with Grubauer there. They've got a mobile back end, but there are a lot of, like you said, there's a ton of good teams. You got Vegas, you got Florida, you got Carolina, Tampa Bay, my God, Boston, Washington. There's a million teams. Anybody could win it. But yeah, you like to put me on the spot, so I'll say Colorado.
That is why Mike Doc Emrick said it best. It's the hardest team trophy to win in all the sports. Yeah. Coach, it's been a pleasure talking to you about the National Hockey League. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Hours and hours about hockey. Always a pleasure having you on the podcast. And depending on what happens to you and your professional career, hopefully having you back in the fall when it's the next season of Hockey O'Clock. Thank you so much for doing this.
No problem. I really enjoyed it, Martin. Like I said, you're a class guy and you ask great questions. You are definitely, without a doubt, so I'm going to pump your tires a little bit here.
Stop
you asked some of the most intelligent hockey questions I've had asked to me of anybody I've ever dealt with. So you do your homework and you're into it. And we, as hockey people, are lucky to have you promoting it.
Stop it right here. I'm blushing. It's all about you and it should be all about you. Thank you so much for doing this.
All right.
Das war Hockey O'Clock in Folge 48. Natürlich gibt's auch kommende Woche noch einmal zum vorletzten Mal Hockey O'Clock, dann in Folge 49 und dann mit niemand Geringerem als dem ehemaligen Kapitän der Spuso Vienna Capitals, der große
Karriere Rückblick mit Mario Fischer. Bis nächste Woche.
Gerne mehr davon.